This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our Judicial Branch Budget Committee meeting for September 28, 2016. My name is David Rubin. I'm a judge in the Superior Court of San Diego County. I'm the chair of the committee. My vice chair, Justice Humes, is also here. We're pleased to welcome everybody, both on the phone and in person. First, let me ask, are there any members of the committee who are on the phone? Well, why don't we do this? So welcome. We're very excited about today's meeting and what we're going to accomplish. We're going to try to be as efficient as possible before we go to our closed educational session later. Let me first ask Ms. Fogarty to take roll.
Judge Rubin?
Present.
Justice Humes?
Here.
Judge Anderson?
Present.
Judge Barton?
Judge Barton told me he would be absent. He's on an unavoidable
Judge Brody?
Here.
Judge Madeline?
Present.
Judge Stout?
Here.
Senna?
Present.
And Ms. Avara, I believe, is going to be a little bit late.
Oh, I thought we were waiting for her. I thought she came. All right.
No.
All right, we'll wait for her. She'll be here in a minute. All right.
Jody's on the line.
Okay.
Who?
Jody's on the line.
Ms. Patelli, you there?
I am, Judge.
There you are. All right, Ms. Fogarty.
So I want to remind members that this meeting is open to the public and is being recorded. Members of the public can join the call via listen-only code, permitting them to join the meeting at any time without notice or interruption.
All right. Great. So we're going to go to our public comment, and we expect this to be a feature at every meeting, but today, sadly, we have no written public comment. So I'm going to ask Ms. Fogarty, is there anybody here in person who would like to make a public comment? All right. Well, that, I guess, concludes our public comment portion of the meeting. Let's go to our first discussion item. So for those of you listening in, the Judicial Branch Budget Committee has at the outset responsibility over three areas. One is the budget change proposal process, about which we'll hear more, I think, later this month. I think we're going to be talking about it. The second is the innovation grants program, which we'll talk, we'll be hearing about next. That's a very exciting component of what we're going to be doing, and I think Ms. Patel can have some exciting news for us. And the third one, which we're about to start talking about, is our $10 million emergency fund, kind of a self-replenishing fund, a fund that we have to keep replenished at the $10 million mark. And what we've done is I've asked Ms. Flannery, our CEO member of the committee, to take a stab at that. Now, this is instead of the 2% fund that we, that Branch used to have. We did reach out to Judge McCabe, who was the chair of the PJ's committee. We reached out to Rick Feldstein, who is the chair of the CEO's committee. And I think we have kind of a new, we're going to get some new information about that we want to talk about in terms of augmenting the proposal that Ms. Flannery has. So Ms. Flannery, let me turn it over to you.
Great. Kimberly Flannery, CEO of the Superior Court. Our subcommittee was asked to review come up with a recommendation for a process and criteria for allocating the $10 million state reserve rather than start over and just hopefully maintain some of the consistency. We asked for the 2% reserve current language and started with that. So we'll walk through what we modified.
All right. And I think you've written a report to that end.
Correct. Right. So the first change that obviously everywhere where you see consistency, no changes. On the first couple of sections, but where we do insert language, the word emergencies was replaced with the replacement for urgent needs, and that's to be, again, consistent with the new statute. So trial courts that are projecting a current year negative fund balance can apply for supplemental funding related to emergencies rather than urgent needs.
And I think, so for those who are listening, when you talk about the statute, you're talking about Government Code 68205.
68502.5.
Perfect.
So there were a couple of sections that had that urgent needs that we did replace with the word emergencies.
All right.
So very minor.
Question, urgent needs and emergencies are defined exactly the same way.
Correct.
That's right. Yeah.
Correct. Again, consistent with the language. When we get to section, a request can be either a loan or one-time funding, but not for ongoing funding. We removed the language because it's already included in the application, correct? So I think the only thing taken out of that is not repaid.
And what's the significance of that?
Some clarification on the application. I think there is a distinction between the two, either a loan, that theoretically is going to be repaid, or it's going to be one-time funding. Yeah, the assumption is one-time funding is you're asking for funding that you don't pay back.
If I could, although in this case, you have to replenish the funds.
Yep. Correct, but instead of the court requesting for replenishing that, one-time funding would be replenished by all 58 trial courts through the base allocation, and we'll get to that later in the report.
So I think the point is, I can interject. It will be repaid because the fund has to be
correct.
Replenished. The question is just by whom.
As we further clarify that in a later section, so that slight modification was made at that point. We did remove in section 4 language. The application requires disclosure of funds previously received, and it includes the parameters required for funding determination. We felt there wasn't a need to include the generally courts may not receive funding for urgent needs in successive fiscal years, absent a clear and convincing showing. So again, the application already requires them to do that. So that language was unnecessary. Then we get into the submission, review, and approval process. So all requests will be submitted to the council for consideration. We're consistent there. The next section, requests will be submitted to the administrative director. We did modify that, or we'll be modifying that to be consistent with the current title. So we will say administrative director, judicial council, as opposed to of the court, by either the court's presiding judge or court executive officer. Next section, same thing, updated to reflect current titles. Administrative director, judicial counsel, will forward the request to the director of budget services, judicial counsel. Next section is D. And this is a section where I do have a new proposal based on further conversations that we've had that Judge Rubin referred to earlier. Our proposal in the report states judicial counsel budget services staff will review the request, follow up with the courts for missing or incomplete information as needed, draft a preliminary report, share that report with the court for comments, revise as necessary, and issue a report to this committee, Judicial Branch Budget Committee. What I'd like to propose is inserting language between the drafting of the preliminary report by judicial counsel staff and before it gets sent to the court for final revision, the requesting court rather. I'd like to insert language that would allow for additional review by court administrators. And so my suggestion would be 3 court administrators. We can call it a court administrator ad hoc working group. So report would be drafted. It would be submitted to this court administrator ad hoc working group for review. Any revisions, any clarifications, those court administrators can then reach out to that requesting court and have that dialogue prior to the report being finalized. Having additional set of eyes, not only having judicial counsel staff look at it, but having review by court administrators. Then once that is concluded, it would go, so the language would pick up, the report would be shared with the requesting court for comments, revised,
and I think you and I are talking about, in this respect, that the 3 CEOs would be the CEO who's on this committee, plus 2 more appointed by the chief after being contacted by the chair. Is CEO on this committee were the requesting court, the chief after three.
Correct.
Okay.
So that was an addition since between the time that this report was drafted. I don't know if there are any questions.
I do.
Good questions. Go ahead.
Well, I don't know what the answer sheet it wasn't for the language would be, but I would. It seems to me like there's going to be some of these requests that are kind of like no-brainers. That just so obvious that why even have them. I mean, so to me, it might make sense to have the language be sort of like
as needed.
As needed, yeah.
Reference.
Agreed.
And I thought about that language as well, but my concern would be. Then who is it up to?
Well, right. But
if it's not coming to this committee, then you're still relying on judicial counsel staff to determine whether or not it's necessary.
And is that bad?
Well, an example might be in judicial counsel, there are some reports or situations that were made aware of through staff that probably merit greater attention. And I think that similar process probably. In other words, if it's just funneled into that level, I like the idea of that level of scrutiny being there because it allows the CEOs who acknowledge the most knowledge of the issues that might be arising to weigh in on it, perhaps forestall an issue or do something that would make the later transition smoother.
Correct.
Judge Anderson, then I think Mr. Iteru.
And to answer the question, I think it is a better process than it is that your court executive officers are really the boots on the ground with respect to budgeting of the local courts. And what they can do is assist the court, even if it's a no-brainer, in making sure that the application is complete, that they have stated their request clearly, and what are the budget impacts to their particular court. Go over those things so that when it does come to this particular committee, a lot of the questions have been answered that we would otherwise have, that your CEO with boots on the ground is able to go ahead and flesh out, as well as maybe some of the larger requests, making sure that the court does sufficiently answer the questions, why should 57 other courts bear the burden of your emergency request as well, because that would be a factor that we're looking at.
And I would echo Judge Anderson in terms of when that assistance and review could happen, rather than staff doing their work and maybe not being able to answer and ask all the questions that are necessary, given the relationship between the staff and the court, that we could put it on a sort of their concurrent review so that there can be questions that are asked of the staff to follow up with, so the staff can support the CEO review rather than them drafting a report, then the CEOs look at it, because it might have been better to get that in advance of a report being completed.
Okay. So staff looks at this. Staff wants this. Is that right? Okay. So is it good enough to call it an ad hoc working group? What do we call that group of people?
And that's where I struggled. We originally talked, and I did speak with both Rick Felstein and Jake Chatters, former chair and current chair of the ad group. We talked about whether or not it should be the court administrators who are on the council. Time there happen to be three, but that may not always be the case. One of those members may be the requesting court. So rather than lock it in, Judge Anderson suggested the language is ad hoc, because it could be created on a case-by-case basis.
I think that's right, though, because we don't know exactly
and we want
what the combination will be. Ms. Zafaro?
First of all, I'm sorry I'm late. I was stuck in traffic.
Give a note.
My kids. I have a question, and I'm sorry if I missed this. Is there a minimum amount of a request that would have to go through this process? I mean, maybe if it was such a small amount, maybe it wouldn't have to go to that ad hoc committee. Or are we always dealing with huge numbers?
To me, branch funds are branch funds.
Okay.
And it's still important because minimum sort of speaks to everybody being similarly sized. And a $50,000 issue to Alpine is a large amount of money for them.
Okay.
And what the operational issues, in my opinion, I think
it's Los Angeles would never request that.
$5 million issue.
I think we're all in agreement, but I think Ms. Flenner's suggestion of the ad hoc committee is excellent, and I think as Judge Nadler alluded to, it might even prevent further requests for CEO or the CEOs can maybe come up with some creative ideas to
right.
solve some problems and have discussions that might, with all due respect to staff, might be a little uncomfortable or awkward. But I think then rejoining staff in that discussion is appropriate. I think it's an excellent.
And as court administrators, we do work together very closely. We do seek guidance from each other. I think it's better received if another court administrator is calling a question or asking for additional detail rather than having judicial counsel staff interject themselves in that process. So just a few to your comment as needed. I would say that it would be on every application, but in those instances where it's black and white, simple, you would require very minimal review, but still going through the same process.
I don't have any objections. I think it's a great idea. I think it makes sense. My only comment, not particularly asking this particular issue, is that it just seems to me like here in the judicial branch, there's so many things that we just overlay so much process to everything that we try to get done that sometimes it just is overwhelming and seems to be counterproductive. And I don't know. The more flexibility. The better, but having said that, I think it's great.
if I may, I have confidence that if staff were tasked to do this, they would do an outstanding job. I think what happens is that staff get inserted into these situations that are very sticky. Yeah. They wind up being the bad guy. And beyond that, I think the CEOs contribute this business background, staff also has, but also business background from a different perspective that's very will be very helpful to the committee and help us kind of make a decision that will have, in which we can have and the branch can have greater confidence. So, I think it's a great idea. Did you have the exact right?
Francie and I will work on
analyzing
that.
What if it's just, we just inserted judicial counsel, budget services staff, and the ad hoc committee of CEOs will review the request. Is there part of the initial review?
And that gives us the flexibility that I think that Justice Hughes is talking about.
Right.
To when, how, and when, and how quickly.
And that way,
how involved they are in the process.
Yeah. If there's a slam dunk, then it's affirmed.
Right.
And then we move on.
Yeah.
If it isn't,
they review it,
review.
It looks great. Or if not, if there are serious questions that are going to be a problem as mm-hmm. a process, they can get into that discussion early to fix those, if they can be fixed.
And I think it also answers the question of consistency and the appearance of fairness.
Yeah.
I think you always want to have a consistent process and a process that is fair so that someone doesn't feel my application was treated differently than another
right.
person's application and someone reviewed yours but not mine. And so there's, yeah, I think that's
exactly right. So, Zlatko, just so that I'm clear, because it's a slight change from what I initially proposed, you're requesting that the court administrator group review it prior to the preliminary report being drafted.
Yes. Okay. There could be information that would be necessary to present in that. Because that report then would go to the court, the request in court for the review we would want.
We would want the court administrative review first, but my only thought, we were talking about your staff doing the technical, basically confirming all of the information that is required for that application has been received. And it's clear. So as long as that part is done prior to it coming to the court administrator.
Yeah, because we would not want you to look at an application that's not complete.
Right. So that was the only.
Right.
And if there's something where there's a bone of contention, then that would be passed on to you as we've determined certain things should be included or weren't included, and they have yet to provide it. It might be that then we use that group to.
Isn't that all included in Judge Brody?
Review the request. Staff will review the request. with courts for missing or incomplete information as needed.
But see, that working, that initial working group could say there's initial information we still need, that the executive officers think that staff might not have thought as significant. But that's fine, too. It gives the flexibility that Justice Hume is suggesting.
The Judicial Council is ready for
instance. Well, Judge Anderson.
I think the Judicial Council service and staff will review the request for completeness and court extend the ad hoc court executive officer committee will review the application and then it will be brought to them. For completeness, I think completeness answers everything.
Yes.
So the Judicial Budget Service and staff will review the request for completeness.
Perfect.
And then that dumps everything.
So for completeness, then follow up with the ad hoc.
And then the next is the ad hoc court executive officer work group.
Okay.
Then to the judicial branch budget committee.
Is there language that will be reviewed? Language ready yet, or should we wait to have it drafted more formally?
Sounds like the language is ready. I think
so I just want to make sure we do.
Okay, so
we're keeping all the rest of this follow up with court for missing or incomplete and all
completeness
of that.
Completeness would be the catchword,
okay.
Because then that necessarily implies that it's incomplete. They need to do it.
Right, and then to the concern you had was what if the CEOs when they go over and say, well, wait, that should have been included. Well, that just is part of their review.
Yeah, that's part of the completeness. Yeah.
Which has happened in the request that we've received as it is. I'd like you to find out about that.
Okay.
And we go and we either have the data available to us in our systems or we have to go and engage the court.
So back to the change from the 2% process is this application will now come to JBBC. Versus going straight to the council, this committee will review it and make the recommendation to the Judicial Council for consideration. Adopting the language that the final report will be provided to the requesting court prior to being made publicly available on the California Court's website. The court may send a representative to the council meeting to present its request, to respond to questions from the council. Both of those remain in place. We did make changes to item 6, replacing again the language with emergencies, also removing the deadline date and no longer in statute, and remove Budget Act enactment reference and replace it with Schedule 1. So the language will now read, courts are authorized to submit requests for emergencies after a proposed baseline budget, Schedule 1, has been submitted by the court.
Mm-hmm. The courts aren't really submitting a request for an emergency. They're submitting a request for emergency funding, right?
Yes.
Oh.
So I would just say courts are authorized to submit a request for emergency funding.
Right. No one really wants emergency.
Emergency funding.
Although that'd be kind of awesome.
Justice. Words with the issue, right? That's why he's on the first.
Well said.
Lucy, did you have anything to add to that section as far as the time frame?
Well, it's just we need to ensure that the court
completed
their budget review and know what they expect to spend. And with the reason we specifically say submitted, not approved, is ordinarily these courts are going to have a negative fund balance situation. So it wouldn't be approved because you cannot have a budget for negative fund balance.
Technical systems issues prevent somebody from telling the system that they haven't they're broke.
Okay.
So they load them preliminarily, but they can't be, they're a final approved because you can't have a negative. That's just a technicality of the process.
Okay. So then we go on to item 7. We did, again, remove time frame for requests to be reviewed in advance of a specified council meeting to allow for council consideration after the review and recommendation process is finalized. We went back and forth with the time frame on this, 25 days, is that enough time? So language now reads, submitted request to Administrative Director Judicial Council will be considered at the next regularly scheduled council meeting following the time necessary to review the application. So in some instances, those black and white simple requests, maybe it takes 3 weeks to process. In a more complex situation and where there's a lot of back and forth with the court, it could take 3 months to process. So whatever time frame is necessary to complete review and recommendation, it will be scheduled on that next council meeting, keeping in mind that we do have deadlines and time frames for posting up council materials. Number 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, all were specific to 50%, so we did remove all of that language. Starting with item 13, replenishment of the reserve will occur on an annual basis as a pro rata reduction to each trial court's beginning base allocation following the following fiscal year. So we wanted to be clear in this section, and I'm sorry, Brandy, that was just a slight change. We did make plural the word allocations, and instead of to the trial courts, we put each. I want to be very clear that the replenishment will come from all 58 trial courts. And that, Judge Anderson, is that your 13 consideration?
Yes. And I think as Planner and I have discussed, I think the challenge is making sure that each court knows as you're sitting down in your meeting, this is a completely different process than the 2% reserve, so that they do understand that as you're budgeting prior to this new statute, you would budget and then say in March, I need to get some additional funds. And so therefore you budget a little more flexible, where now they need to understand come June, you're budgeting for everything. There is no money coming in March, and that your initial allocation is going to be reduced. So you need to really do some strategic planning in May with respect to your own court's reserve. So this is a little challenging because some courts will then about April, May, prior to the end of the fiscal year, start looking at their reserves to say which funds should go in OPEB, what should we do, how much money should we keep, should we maintain a certain reserve because it's based on what they think is coming down the pipe in June, July, and based on March. So we wanted to make sure the courts know this is the die.
Right.
So I'm not sure if I understand. I'm not sure I'm getting that. So the idea is that we're telling them they have to budget to the dime, but they have to anticipate that their pro rata portion of any of these emergency fund requests is going to have to be included in their budgeting?
Correct.
Basically what you're saying?
To the degree, yes, because what will happen is that you don't know exactly what your allocation is going to be
right.
Until all the numbers have been added, subtracted, multiplied, and divided by a whole host of things. This is just notices them to keep an eye out because, assuming it to be true, we have some large requests. We're hoping that most of them are small requests. But assuming it to be true that there's a large request, then the entire trust fund is going to be reduced in order to replenish back the $10 million fund. So your upcoming allocation may be reduced as you're budgeting to the dime so that you know what to do with your reserves come May, June. That's a huge decision.
Right.
And just to give you a scale, so the 2% fund fluctuated, but I think it was probably, let's say, an average number, 35, 36 million. I think it fluctuated between 34 and 37. Is that right? This fund is 10 million, so less than a third of its size. So I would expect that the subscription to this fund would be less, would happen less frequently because you're talking about some smaller pot of money, and the courts already have given the bulk of what would normally have been, say, the 2%.
Held in the 2%.
Yeah, right. So I'd expect it to be smaller.
I think in terms of contrast, the prior process was money was taken from you and you weren't exactly sure during that current fiscal year what might occur. So you were doing your best guess. But at this process...
You could assume that something was probably
going to happen. So there were a variety of some people were saying, I might not get any two, I'm going to get 100%. And it tended to be very close to getting 100% back. But you weren't sure, and since it came late in the fiscal year and it was a large amount of money, how did you manage that from a year-end management?
Yeah.
With this process, whatever happens in the current year won't impact you until the subsequent fiscal year, and so you're able to better budget for that, and you'll know it. So as you're tracking through the fiscal year, next year when I make my budget, I know I'm going to have to make a contribution to replenish the 10. At least then you have that full fiscal year to manage it. So it's beneficial that way. And it helps you as you end the fiscal year, knowing there might be a budget adjustment coming in the subsequent year,
that's helpful.
That you've accounted for that in your overall plan.
Right. So the trial court at like July 1st knows how much money it's going to have to pay.
Because they would have known, we would have known any of the actual allocations.
And then the next question comes, the equity of this process of like work that we all share in the replenishment for the money that goes to a specific court versus that specific court being on the hook to replenish the fund back to the $10 million. And so that we partially have that conversation, but as an outset, I feel like it's fair. I mean, I think we're part of the reason this committee is in existence is to create a branch-wide approach and that we're all in this together and go one court. We're talking about the citizens and the attorneys in that court, go all of us, because we're all pretty mobile and lots of lawyers who support us up and down the state, and it makes a lot of sense that we're all in it together to replenish the fund back to 10. But we may have different views.
And I think that takes us right back into the next section with regard to the time frame. And so we have the March 15th and June 30th time frame in the prior 2% model. We've talked about being able to extend it even farther through the fiscal year, but we needed to keep in mind the need for all the courts to develop their budgets, for us to have a clear idea of what has been approved. So the language now reads request due to emergency, again, request for funding. So
emergency funding.
Request for funding due to emergencies. Request for funding due to emergencies approved by the council after April 1 of any given fiscal year will be distributed to the court as a cash advance loan until the following fiscal year when the court, if necessary, could apply for emergency funding in the new fiscal year in order to repay the cash advance loan. So, same.
Actually, the wording is right. It is request due to emergency.
Okay.
I mean, it's important.
And then it does say in the next section, you could apply for emergency funding. So I know it's not a significant increase in time frames to request that money. So, but again, we have to keep in, and just for the fact that you've indicated, Judge Anderson talked about finalizing budgets for all of the other trial courts, if those applications, and we know by April 1st, we will have received any and all requests that are going to come out of that $10 million emergency fund. We would know by that subsequent council meeting, after those applications are reviewed, if it was approved, and then courts would know their pro rata share of what's needed to be deducted or reduced from their base allocation. So, April 1, any comments, concerns with that? We again adopted the language from 15. And, well, do we need to update 15? The funding for emergent for urgent needs to be considered?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll monitor that. Again, adopting all of 15, asking for the same information that we asked the courts to provide under the 2% model. No changes until F. And the only changes there were updating the fiscal year and removing FY reference from 11-12 language, 16-17, 17-18, and 18-19. Adopting G through K, one slight modification to item L, 5 years of filing and disposition numbers rather than termination numbers for clarification purposes. And adopting the rest of the process all the way through item 17. I did want to note that our committee did talk about notification and full disclosure to all the PJs and court execs so they truly understand the process. In that final paragraph, it says, toward the bottom, include a requirement for courts to elaborate on why 57 courts should assist in funding the request through a pro rata base allocation deduction the following fiscal year. Goes back to the language that we talked about earlier, making sure that everyone is clear and that the requesting court truly understands the fiscal impact that their request will have.
I have a question. Are there any standards? That kind of goes to this question too. Are there any standards, or do we have any standards for the difference between a loan and a request? Because sometimes courts will ask for a loan, suggesting that they're going to repay it, and that's not going to implicate the other consortium in Seminole County. And sometimes they'll be asked for money, which would. Do we have any? Is there any kind of standard for that, or do we leave it to the court?
I mean, it is a part of an analysis of their future budget and their cash flow. And there oftentimes we do ask them, could you take this as a loan rather than as an actual augmentation in addition to their to give them that if they haven't thought about it.
Right. So I think that would be part of the CEO's discussion with the board to, you know, in submitting it then prior to this time, to discuss with them if it's better off as a loan or
Proactive
share in the request. And I think the decision then would be up to our
staff cash advances on a regular basis. And it's through that dialogue that if the court comes to a conclusion that there may not be an ability to pay it back, then that's when the avenue of an actual increase comes. So it is just, I don't like to say a standard, it's just you have to see them as they come and look at the circumstances of the issue, the scope of it, the future, you know, what the budget might look like, what lawful impacts might be, and that sort of thing.
Can I ask a question on that?
You said the staff processes cash advances on a regular basis. So the court says we've got an issue. We've got an unexpected expense. We don't have the money to cover it. We will after this. We just need you to. We need some operational money to get us through the next 2 months based on this one-time expense. We will pay you back at the next budget cycle. Is that just handled administratively? Or okay. So how does
that differ from a loan under this program?
That sounds like a loan. Right?
And then they do kind of feel the same way. I mean, the loan is more sort of a vestige of the last process.
But then what's the difference then between a loan under this process and a cash advance?
I would say really nothing.
It's a cash advance always. Back within the current fiscal year.
It is crossed. It is crossed fiscal years.
Okay. I was going to say that could be one of the.
If it was multi-year and they needed to pay it back in installments, that might be. We've only had that once. San Joaquin was provided a loan and given 5 years to repay it, and they just completed their final repayment to the improvement and modernization fund.
How do you distinguish the 1% reserves limitation? Start getting them for cash flow.
Cash advances.
How do you distinguish them in-house, like a cash advance? Like, have you ever said, oh, you're asking for a cash advance, really should be applying for a loan? Has that ever happened?
I don't know. I think it was at Humboldt who had the extraordinary homicide trial issue. at one point, they asked for an actual increase, and then we said, well, there's going to be this other process to get money through this extraordinary homicide trial fund and pot for small counties. And they had expenses that they thought they were going to incur early. So at one point they asked for an actual increase. It turned into maybe a loan, depending on how much would be getting gotten back, and then it just turned into a cash advance.
So you said that cash advance would turn into loans and vice versa. Have you ever had a loan not get repaid and then turn
not,
into like
a... Not to
oh, really? My knowledge. So you have to extend the deadline to make sure that... Or do people
want
to pay it back?
Yeah, I mean, in the case of San Joaquin, they were given a 5-year period to repay the loan, and they repaid it.
I guess there's kind of two questions. One, is it within the purview of this committee? Are we supposed to be dealing with cash advances as well as loans? And if not, how do we make that distinction? And maybe it's paid back within the fiscal year is a way to make that distinction. I don't know.
But there's been times where they bleed into the July, August,
right.
And that's how they adjust. So, I mean, I would say that courts sometimes need cash advances in days,
right.
Where a revenue is delayed and they have a payroll that they need to make.
Right.
And we process those, like, you need to approve this right now. And people are running to the bank downtown here at Bank of America to put money into a bank account for a court. So I would say that that's part of our normal assistance of financial support to courts, whereas this is moves into another realm where you have the need for an absolute increase. That money is going to be pooled from the rest of the trial courts to replenish that fund. I mean, I think it takes on a whole other color because these cash advances are within your allocation, your council-approved allocation. Rather than getting it in 1/12, you need, you know, 2/12 in a month, and then you reduce it in the future.
Is there a cap in terms of how much you're willing to give in a cash advance?
It's all relative to
the
and there are some limitations in terms of how much money we actually have in a fund.
Okay.
Like the Trial Court Trust Fund may have actual cash issues, but then we use other funds to try and support their cash advance.
So there's no, like, hard cap for either cash advances or loans?
All
right.
That concludes our... Well, I think just a little bit of background. So I had asked four people on the committee to... Ms. Flenner, Judge Brody, Judge Anderson, and Judge Nadler to kind of strip down a $10 million fund and help frame up the conversation for today so we would not be just floundering around. And what a job they did. So,
great job.
Great job.
I'd like to also send appreciation to Lockwood Museum and Brandon.
Yes, of course.
Critical of this process and did provide us all the information we requested. I'm short turnaround time, so thank you.
I do too. So thank you to all the staff who worked so hard. So we need a couple things in. So we need a. And Judge Anderson, how's that one? Okay. So what we need is. Couple motions. One is a motion to adopt this proposal that's modified given our discussion today. And the second motion, it has to be a second motion. We're incorporating that motion is to charge staff of being kind of technical cleanups we're talking about subject to our approval.
So the motion would be. Adopt this as a recommendation to council?
Assuming, yeah, the council.
Yes.
Okay. And as modified, so we discussed it today, and then to allow the staff to make all the technical cleanups. Based on what you said and kind of what there may be other little pieces that we didn't quite pick up that this all. So the motion is from Judge Nadler. There's a second from Ms. Ibarra. All right, let's have a discussion. Any further discussion? All right, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? 5, motion carries.
Great. Outstanding.
Great work. Thank you, Ms. Flynn, for all that.
And for all the outreach.
Yeah. And also to the staff for all their outreach to the affected folks. All right. That takes us to our item 2. And we have Ms. Tell, our chief of staff, there.
Yes. Thank you, Judge. And I also have Maureen Dumas, our manager of our special projects office, joining by phone as well. Between Maureen and I, we will give you an update on the innovations grant program. As we had discussed in our last meeting, and as planned and approved by the Judicial Council, on September the 1st, we did go ahead and release the request for application to seek grant applications and proposals for the $25 million that was in the budget bill for 2016. And as you'll recall, the $25 million is broken down into three components. As a reminder for our committee members, $12 million was for collaborative courts, $8 million was for self-help, family, and juvenile courts, and $5 million for other efficiencies across the different court operational areas. On September 20th, we held two WebEx teleconferences, teleconference calls, one at 8 and one at 4 in the afternoon. And we had a very, very good participation on that call. We had a total of 141 participants on those calls, 87 at the 8 o'clock call, and 54 people joined us for the 4 o'clock call in the afternoon. We had overall 47 of the 58 trial courts that attended either one or both of the calls. And overall, we had 10 staff from the appellate courts that also attended either one or both of the calls. We also have posted on our public website an FAQ document that we continue to update as we receive questions. And I should say we're very, very pleased by the number of questions that we are getting for clarification and just basic questions. Total, we've received a total of 98 questions to date. And so you can find the FAQ document on our website. And my hope, Judge Rubin and Justice Hume, is that our staff were able to hand out a hard copy document to you of the FAQs there in San Francisco. The courts were also available, the courts were, could also submit a notice of intent, which was due by this past Monday. The notice of intent is not a mandatory component of applying for the grant funds, but we put that in our RFA because we wanted to, before the final filing date of October 31st, at least start getting an idea of how many proposals we were going to be receiving or we should anticipate, so that we can internally to the Judicial Council begin to plan for the workload associated with the grant proposals and in support of your committee. So far, we've received 161 proposed projects outlined in the Notice of Intent. And the Notice of Intent basically is just a very, very short descriptor of what the court may be envisioning in terms of their submittal. They are not bound to submit what they have noted in their notice of intent, but like I said, it was to give us and for your committee an idea of what we can anticipate in terms of workload in reviewing all of these proposals between now and the time that your committee makes final recommendations to the Judicial Council.
So when do you think we can get a look at those?
At the notice of intent concepts?
Yeah.
If Lucy or one of the staff on there, they can, for your committee, Judge, we can make sure you get a hard copy of that before you adjourn today.
Okay,
we'll send the Budget Committee an e-copy of that. Kind of in a summary, for the 161 proposed concepts, there are a total of 46 different courts that have submitted those. So we fully anticipate getting quite a few by the end of the month of October. As we had discussed, our staff are geared and ready to do a preliminary review of those and outline any thoughts, comments, concerns on those proposals for your committee's review, Judge. And Maureen, I don't know if I left anything off there or you want to add anything. I know your staff, Maureen's staff have been on the front lines, Judge, answering all of these questions. They're getting the questions by phone, by email, in a variety of different ways, and they've done a fabulous job of working on the FAQ document. So, Maureen, did I miss? Yeah.
No, just I think probably as you were talking, we actually upped the number to 165 courts or 165 programs from 47 courts.
There you go.
And of that, just to let you know, 42 of those are trial courts and 5 are courts of review. So a lot of interest. The only other thing that we're working on to let you know is, you know, the criteria was spelled out in the request for applications, but we've forwarded a methodology to Judge Rubin and Justice Humes for their initial look because we want to make sure you have a tool when you're looking at the application that helps you in scoring the applications. I don't know if you're interested, just at a high level, a large majority of the concepts or projects that were filed under the Notice of Intent to Apply have to do with technology. And it's everything from web portals for justice partners, for the public, for the courts, to digitizing the court record, to digital recording in the courtroom, to e-filing, to remote appearances, using your mobile phone. A wide variety of technical technology ideas. And then there's other things for equipment. People are asking for money for kiosks, monitors, phone upgrades, replacements of scanners. There are collaborative court proposals for veterans court, mental health courts, sex trafficking courts, teen courts. And then there's a lot of expansion for self-help programs. And a lot of that, to be honest, is going towards using technology to help self-help self-represented litigants. So it's quite a variety. We are going to go through right now. When you get the list today, we will have categorized it by court. But our goal next is to start digging through. And for those who were able to tell us which category it goes under, we will be further pushing that out so that we have the ability to kind of see how many are coming in for each category. And, again, not all of these may result in applications, but we want to have our subject matter experts here at the council ready to assist you all as you start to review the applications. And that's it. Well, October 31st is the deadline for the submission, so we could probably start getting them in at any point in time.
Great. I think we have several questions. I want to ask, Ms. Ibarra's got a question, Ms. Flanner's got a question. Just as soon as I hear you with a question. All right, we have 3 questions. Ms. Ibarra.
Oh, my question's quick. So, with the 47 courts and the 165 concepts, are you asking courts who have multiple concepts to prioritize? Not that that's going to be dispositive of what they're going to get, but which is their favorite project?
The courts have not, as a part of the criteria that was developed for the program, they are not being asked to prioritize because since it is an innovations grant program, we wanted your committee to have the most flexibility in terms of determining which are truly the most innovative. By prioritizing, our fear was that courts may assume at that point that their highest priorities may be getting an award versus looking at the entire population and the committee prioritizing which are the most innovative.
I would mention that could be difficult, too, because some courts are presenting multiple requests, and one request may be singular to that trial court, but the other request involves other courts, multi-court applications, so it would be hard to prioritize.
Right.
Ms.
And I think you, maybe Maureen, you partially answered it. I was just curious to see if you had some indication of how many applied under each category.
Yeah, I don't have a formal count. Last night I was reading page after page after page. I am curious to see how much we have in the collaborative courts area because obviously that's the largest chunk of money. But I was kind of just categorizing tech to kind of get that idea. So I don't have it yet, but that's one of our charges. I don't know if we'll have that to you when we send it to you today, but we will definitely start parsing that out. And for those that we can tell where they're applying, because some cases people didn't tell us. They didn't have to. We thought it would be nice if they could, but we're for those who did tell us, we'll be able to give you some preliminary information.
And I guess a question on the call, one of the calls with regard to submitting multiple applications for the same thing just under separate categories, and the decision was made that they only had to submit one application if it was identical and they could indicate that it would be for self-help and other.
That's correct.
All right, and Jefferson.
My question is, and I know that this is very early on in the process and we won't have definitive numbers until the end of October, but do we have a sense on how much money is being asked in applications for these concepts?
No. No, the notice of intent doesn't get into that level of specificity, Justice Humes, and the courts still need time to pencil out exactly what the cost of their proposal will be. And there is, as a part of the application process, a very detailed budget sheet that they'll have to fill out. But there is no cost information at this juncture.
There's no danger of us.
Yeah. I don't believe we are going to have leftover money based on what I'm looking at. Yeah.
Great. I was going to ask the committee if I may. Did each of your respective courts submit? Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Pottery.
Yeah, see how that will work when it comes time to evaluate when that happens.
Right, all very exciting. I'm excited also that we're going to be able to be getting e-copies so we can all start looking at them today. I think, I haven't talked to Justice Hughes about this, but I'm hoping he'll agree with me. I think that at this, he's already shaking his head. This is a go-to place.
Yeah,
good default. We, because these are only the concept phase and they may contain information, they're sensitive to each of these courts in terms of things that they're doing, we will be treating the concept phase certainly as confidential, and so we're not going to be sharing these outside the committee, staff that support the committee. I just wanted to share that. All right. Any more questions for Ms. Patel and Ms. Dumas?
Thank you.
I think this is great.
Yeah.
I'm very excited. I want to thank Ms. Patel, you and your staff, and everybody who has worked on it so far. It sounds like we have our work cut out for us, and that's very exciting. Reflects a really vibrant branch that is really out to make real innovations and not take us into the 20th century, but somewhere in the 21st century. All set up for the first few years. So good job.
Yeah, great.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Ben. So those of you who are listening in, thank you. That does conclude the open meeting. And we will take about a 5-minute recess, and then we will go into our closed session. Thank you. Drop the air.